one of the biggest learnings is that there is always a very structured approach for most of the problems that you're going to be facing. So a lot of the problems that you're facing right now might have been covered or might have been tackled by somebody in some shape or form already.
Welcome to the Growth Show. What keeps us driving is what drives you further. This is your hosts, Sebastian Kunz
and Sarah Kaya.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of The Growth Show. We have the big pleasure to have Lucas Hensch with us. Lucas's career started back in 2011 in beautiful California with Richmond View Ventures. Before he moved to Google, he worked out of the Google Dublin headquarters for 4 years. Before then joining Workday for a year, and now he founded his own company a bit over a year ago, PathMonk. We're very excited to have you here, Lucas. Thanks for being in the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. What a pleasure to be with you guys, and thanks for the great introduction.
So just to kick it off, Lucas, if you connect the dots, growth and yourself, how would you describe it?
Very, very interesting. Yeah, I mean, so basically I would say the different steps that has been just mentioned by you guys has been helping me to, you know, shape my profile, shape the knowledge that I can bring to the table, to the teams that I've been working with. So it's been, yeah, steps from working in San Francisco, in Berlin actually as well, and then spending about 4 years at Google working with different teams there, Google Maps team, Inbox by Gmail, and then sort of finally working on their mobile optimization team has been helping me to get, you know, different insights from the product side, but also from the mobile speed and mobile UX and optimization side. So, and then continue that steps forward, working in another Silicon Valley firm with Workday as a product designer, where I sort of combined this UX knowledge that I was collecting at Google. And then at some point, it was just the right time to, you know, take all the learnings, all the things that I've seen in terms of what is important for mobile optimization, where are the challenges for a lot of companies, and then, you know, jump out to build our own product.
So if you look back, what was your biggest learning in your so far career?
The one biggest learning, wow, that's a big one.
Straight to the point.
I would say one of the biggest learnings is that there is always a very structured approach for most of the problems that you're going to be facing. So a lot of the problems that you're facing right now might have been covered or might have been tackled by somebody in some shape or form already. And trying to find that right structure, right? Right now we're building up the company that can be, you know, within all the fields, you know, there is a structured approach for sales. There's a very structured approach for product development. There's a very structured approach for mobile page speed optimization, as we're going to be talking about today. So I would say that's the one key thing, knowing that trying to find that structure and filling that with information is much more efficient than trying to, you know, just like soak in all the information and don't putting it into any form or structure.
Very, very interesting. Lucas, what led you to San Francisco in the first place? So you started working out of the San Francisco Richmond View Ventures office 8 years ago. How did you start there?
Yeah, I started, that was back when, you know, getting out of university, was very interested into technology companies, startups, and started working with Richmond View Ventures, which was located between Berlin and San Francisco, and started as an entrepreneur in residence back then. So I didn't have a team, I didn't have that amazing idea yet, but I definitely had the hunger and the interest to work in that field. And Richmond View Ventures offered a great opportunity working as an entrepreneur in residence, which means you will go through all of their portfolio companies or some of their portfolio companies in sort of 3 or 4 months steps and would take on a different role into each of the startups. So a sales role, a product development role, to learn so all the different aspects of building up a tech company. So I spent a good half of the time in San Francisco and the other half in Berlin.
Cool. And then you were sliding into Google and was probably a very, very big and big step in your career. Being there for 4 years means you've actually worked a lot there. You have had a lot of insights and you grew a lot personally. I think for the people outside, Google is such a big name and it would be great to understand what changes did you realize yourself in yourself in those 4 years, also being surrounded by people that shaped the industry, by very smart and clever people, would be great to get some insights here.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I mean, I think definitely the great thing that you have within Google is, especially when you head out to the Mountain View office, which I would be doing on a kind of regular basis, you get in contact with really, really great people. So I would be working very close, for example, with the head designer of Gmail, right? And if you work, or one of the product managers of Gmail for a while, and if you're doing that, you're really working with people who manage those like massive products, and you can take a lot from that. So that was one big step, just being close to this type of people that build up these products, learn from them. I would say that's actually one of the biggest thing, and I'm very grateful for that experience.
Mm-hmm. And your last steps, you were a page specialist within Google, and which leads us to our today's topic, especially. So, what would you say is the best speed metric to look at?
I really like this question because there's tons of different metrics, right? You could be looking at the full load time. You could be looking at the time to the first byte of a page. You could be looking at the start of the render. One metric that I think is sometimes a little bit overlooked, but that we looked very closely to while we were working on this within Google, is a metric called Speed Index. Mm-hmm. And Speed Index is a metric that you can be getting from tools such as webpagetest.org and others. And basically what it represents is the time that it takes to fully paint the first screen above the fold, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about, you know, what does a user actually see if they go into your mobile site at the first place, what they're going to be seeing is that first rectangle, basically, that they hold in their hand, and that loads has to load up quickly. So your hero images, your value proposition, your main call to action, everything that is in that first fold paint. I think that's a really great metric to optimize to. And having that angle also leads you to slightly different optimization approaches, as we're probably going to be talking about today. That speed index is given in milliseconds. So it will be saying, for example, if you have a speed index of 3,000, it means that your page loads within 3 seconds. Or that above the fold content is ready 100% within three seconds.
And that's bad, no? 3 seconds is a long time.
So, I mean, so you have to qualify further. So there's a couple of studies out there, right? So about one of the biggest studies that we always were handing back and forth within Google was that 53% of consumers will leave a site if it takes longer than 3 seconds to load, right? Mm-hmm. So, but then on the other hand, if you step out there in the reality, there is tons of pages that load longer, even just for that first paint, right? Take longer than 3 seconds for that first paint. So definitely the longer it takes to load, I think if you look at the 3 second mark, there's quite a lot of studies that show that after the 3 second mark for the first paint, conversion rates, which are correlated to the page load, start to decrease quite significantly with every sort of couple of 100 milliseconds that you add to the page.
So the fun thing is actually what you mentioned is pretty interesting, because most of the people always look for the score, which Google PageSpeed Insight says, or like tools.pingdom says, and you know, the score, and we try to get 100, but actually it's the speed they should like look into, right?
I mean, I'm not saying that the indexes and the scores are not relevant. They are relevant because they highlight issues on the page. Mm-hmm. Right. What I'm trying to say is you have to basically do one step back and say, okay, what is the actual experience that a person has on the page? And the actual experience is not some score. The actual experience is how long does it take until they see something?
Yeah.
Right. And so therefore, speed index is a really good thing to optimize for. Also, it allows for much sort of more lightweight approaches to optimize in many cases. So I would say those scores, they're really good. I mean, they're really there for real reason. I mean, they're being supported by Google, right? Anyways. So they make a lot of sense to optimize for. But also having that other angle of looking at the speed index will help you to really, you know, make sure that your content actually loads fast.
What could be the reasons why my page, my website, my blog stays on a blank screen for a while? What could be the reasons from your point of view?
Yeah, so I think the key thing there, the key concept is to look at the browser and realize that the browser has to go a certain path until it can actually show any content.
Yeah.
Right? And that path is called the critical rendering path. And the critical rendering path is basically all the steps that the browser has to go through or complete until it's even able to show anything on the screen, right? And there is certain type of files that are basically, you know, being part of that rendering path. That's, you know, your HTML, your CSS, and your JavaScript to a large degree. And if any of those can affect a render block, specifically JavaScript, is going to be by default render blocking, which means, just to simplify that, what that means is, if you have tons of JavaScript loading at the beginning, it's going to be render blocking. Render blocking means the browser showing nothing, and then it's blank, right? So it's basically thinking from the angle that the browser actually has to take while it's, you know, in the first instance, you know, going for the DOM building, getting your CSS, your JavaScript, then taking the DOM and connecting that to the render tree, and then actually doing the paint. So it's a process that the browser has to walk through. And if you're sort of accidentally affect that process negatively, your screen is going to be blank for a while.
So I think most of the time people, for instance, if a website is built on a WordPress, for instance, people do it themselves most of the time, I guess, because it seems like it's easy, and it is if you like really try to do it yourself. And the funny thing is, sometimes they forget to look into, for instance, the contact form. If they only have it on the contact page, it still loads in a lot of pages and stuff like that. So curious, what do you think would be something that impacts the page speed and the page performance immediately?
For example, let's take the WordPress example, and we can go into a couple of examples then one by one. First WordPress example would be, you can look at your plugins, right? Yeah. All the plugins that you have on the page. So what does a plugin actually consist of? In many cases, because there's some functionality into them, and there's quite some JavaScript being involved. What that means in turn is, if you're loading all of those plugins, even if they're not needed on this page, as you were just highlighting, you're still going to be render blocking this page that you're loading, even with plugins that might not be even needed on that page. So a quick workaround just for this would be, there is, you could either do this through a plugin, or you could do this through a few lines of PHP to basically conditionally load your plugins only on those pages where they're actually needed, and push all those other plugins or basically also the JS of those other plugins to be loaded later. So that would be one way in the WordPress context. Ultimately, it's really about looking at your load time. You know, webpagedesk.org is a great tool. It looks a bit old, but it's actually built from a couple of Googlers. So it's not an official Google tool, but built by basically, you know, the guys that are kind of sort of heading up a page speed optimization within Google. And if you throw your URL into there, you run a test on mobile, and you know, you pick either, you know, 5G, 4G, maybe even 3G fast, depending on, you know, where your customer is actually coming from, you will see in slow motion how fast is your page loading, what is happening at which step, you know, how long is it blank, what does it show at the beginning, what is the next step, and then you can sort of relate that to which files have been loaded. And you will see, if you're blanking for a long time, you will see, okay, there's a lot of JavaScript files at the top. And a couple of quick wins that I've been seeing that are coming again and again, maybe I can mention a couple. And stop me, guys, if I'm going too much into this wrong direction. But a couple of the quick wins would be, if you would have a carousel on your website at the top, right? A lot of e-commerce pages had or still have it, where you load a carousel on mobile that is basically, you know, flicking a few marketing messages. In most instances, this is going to be a JavaScript carousel that holds a couple of images, right? Which basically takes a lot from your performance budget. When I say performance budget, you have to figure out, you know, how much is it worth for you to actually block the render for the time that this JavaScript is being downloaded and executed versus what that carousel actually gives you in terms of conversions on the page, finally, right? And obviously, you know, 6 images on top of that also contribute, especially if they're not being, you know, optimized or compressed. That's one nice one. I think one that I thought was sort of interesting and, you know, not super obvious is, it happens sometimes that a page is loading, the, you know, it's not blank anymore, but the fonts are not there, right? You don't read it for maybe 1 or 2 or 3 seconds. You don't see what is the actual the message, what is the key value that is being provided. And a couple of things that I thought was very interesting in regards to this is, for example, if you look at what are the most commonly used web fonts, right? So Roboto, Open Sans are by far the most commonly used web fonts. If you just be using them, if there is no specific design consideration, then you already benefit from the fact that it's already been cached somewhere else, right? Because they're nearly with a guarantee of what is like 80% have they been on the page where they already downloaded that font that they need on your page, and so it's just going to show up immediately, right? So it's all those like small steps in combination, and we could go into many more, I'm happy to do so, that are actually are combining how quick all those individual files are loading. Another one is, you know, your font files, for example, where we were speaking about the fonts, either they're in an old font file format. You know, there's TTF and there's WAF2. WAF2 is 30% smaller than TTF. You transform it, that font, that file comes in a 30% smaller package to be downloaded. And there's tons, right? If you use your, look at your icons, I've seen so many times that pages load the full icon set while they only need three or four icons on the page, rather than just taking that one icon or a couple of icons and load them individually. You could even go one step further and say you Base64 encode those icons, which means you turn that icon into a string of code, implement that into the HTML, which means you then automatically send it with the first request, right? So it's all about optimizing those steps. You could even do that with a hero image. That's debatable. Some people like it, some people don't, because there's pros and cons. But you could even go as far as saying, I'm taking my hero image, right? Basically, that takes, in most of the cases, it takes about, say, 60-70% of the above-the-fold content. You take that hero image, you Base64 encoded, which makes it a code string, implement that into the HTML, which means, again, you're sending the hero image with the first request rather than with, you know, sometimes in the 30th, 40th, whatever requests. So, yeah, there's a lot of this, like, small steps. I think the key message there and the key thing that I took away is that it doesn't have to be the server that has to be optimized. It doesn't have to be the whole infrastructure that has to be optimized. It can be sometimes this like small things that we've been discussing, and you know, deferring JavaScript is a big one. Yeah. You have a lot of JavaScript on your page. You're thinking about an e-commerce store, right? Your JavaScript for the checkout page, let's say, that will not be needed in the first couple of seconds, but it's going to be loaded in many cases. And as we just discussed before, the JavaScript is being render blocking. Hence, it's contributing to the blank screen, but it's not even giving any value in the first couple of seconds. So that could be deferred, means you're adding a small script, a small tag to the script tag to say script defer, and then it's going to be loading after the page is completed. Yeah, so it's a combination of looking at what is actually blocking rendering in your case, what is loading slowly, and then going step by step through those files.
How would you recommend to anybody out there that wants to launch a company or build their own website? What would be the first baby steps? How would you recommend some people to start to structure their mobile website? Because I think many people think about the wrong things first. And I think you're at the source of knowledge pretty much when it comes to optimizing or like starting a website from scratch that then is highly optimized.
And you're saying if you want to optimize your page for mobile speed?
Is that exactly, yeah.
So I think there's a couple of approaches. It really depends on, you know, what you're doing and where you're starting. If you're starting something that is very text heavy, images and text, you know, accelerated mobile pages, AMP, yeah. Like it's a Google sort of type of framework, is a really good place. But even just simple things, right? Thinking like one simple thing, if you load a video, right? And this is only now from a page speed perspective, right? Because conversions, you have to take more things into consideration when you look at conversions than just page speed. But if you look from the page speed angle, a video can be quite harming because you have to load, you know, the player framework, you have to get the video in itself, which usually loads quite a bit. And if it's just a background video that is not doing anything really, then, you know, this opacity layers on top of videos that sometimes run in the back, they might be harming your performance while not increasing the conversions, for example. So you could test to run, you know, just take an image that looks similar or is the same or is just a hero image of that video and have that showing on the mobile screen versus running the heavy video on mobile. That's a couple of things I should say, but I think it's key to say, especially because you mentioned startups, even established companies sometimes don't put focus on the mobile speed optimization. I mean, it has been increasing within this, I would say this year, the last year, but you know, I also know own experience building up a company, you have a lot of other things on the plate. So I would say maybe those really big things, just optimizing, loading a couple of images less, or load them in lazy loading. That's another thing. You could be loading your images up on scroll that are only being pulled basically on demand. Mm-hmm. I hope that gives a rough idea too. I mean, think slightly different about you. Not everything you show on desktop, you have to show on mobile if it's not giving value and perform.
Yeah.
Giving a negative sort of edge on the performance budget.
I think from that point of view, it would be also interesting if you could just make maybe a quick guide on how the browser actually deals with a website.
Yeah, sure. So I think I touched on this a little bit, but basically we can be going through the browser rendering process, what I mentioned before, which is the critical rendering path. So basically, at the very beginning, just keep it on high-level steps, it takes your HTML file, so it's doing HTML parsing, building up the DOM, looking at your CSS files, getting those, JavaScript, and then it's combining your DOM that we were just speaking before with your CSS OM, and then creating the render tree. So that, a lot of words, but basically it goes through a couple of steps that it has to proceed. So it's constructing basically the page until it's being able to paint anything of this. And as I mentioned before, like the elements in between, they can be blocking this process because they are blocking in the sense that the browser stays working on that step, right? So if you have a lot of JavaScript files, the browser stays to download, execute, going to the next step. So it's in that sense, for example, JavaScript is actually, if you be more in detail, it's actually parser blocking. So the HTML is parsing, and while a JavaScript file is being downloaded and then executed, only then the HTML parsing continues. Yeah, which means that those files sort of, they sort of tackle into what the browser is trying to do when setting up the page, because, I mean, for a good reason, right? Because it needs those elements to make the page there. But the logic there being that you're not using all of this while you're at the very first millisecond of you using the page, right? You're just going to be looking at the first screen, and then you will start interacting. So everything that is blocking there is and can be shown later. There is even ways. I mean, it's a bit more tricky in reality, but you could even be looking at your CSS files and say, because very usually often is the case, you have a huge CSS file that's being loaded at the very beginning, takes what, 3 seconds to even download it. There's ways to say, okay, just take the critical CSS, and I'm not really recommending this because it's quite some work to do, but you could be doing it. Take your critical CSS and inline that into your HTML, and then load the rest of the JavaScript, the CSS later. Yeah, so I hope that answers the question of how the browser is dealing with information.
Totally, but just for the people who are maybe less technical in our audience, what is a DOM actually?
So basically, it's all about it's about setting up the infrastructure for. I'm trying to answer this in a non-technical way. Set up the infrastructure for the browser to be basically pulling in information and putting them at their place where they should be showing on the screen. I would say that's my best non-technical explanation that I could be giving it.
I think that's a great one. What would you say are the five biggest mistakes people do when it comes to, building a website in terms of page speed in general, and also how could they prevent it? And maybe not just JavaScript, render blocking and stuff like that, but maybe easier stuff. What would you say?
I mean, ultimately, a lot of easy stuff boils down to this. So I would give you one of my number one thing would be you have used an A/B testing tool at some point because you wanted to run some tests, mm-hmm. right? Happens in bigger companies actually quite a lot.
Yeah.
You wanted to run an A/B test. You've been using it. It has been successful, and the tag still remains, even though no tests are being running anymore, right? Or nothing is active, yeah. But the tag is still there. You mentioned not related to JavaScript, but this would be one, a very simple one, is just to look, did we remove all the tags that are not being in use anymore? And if you look at, especially if once you go to like a little bit larger companies, very, very often they still sit there. So that would be one thing, a very simple one, because ultimately boils down to the same thing. those tags are JavaScript heavy. They're affecting everything that we were just discussing before. So that would be, I think, a very, very simple one. Another one is, you know, super simple ones is obviously, you know, to compress your images. I think especially with images, a lot of different things can be done as well. I would say maybe the key two things, we spoke about lazy loading already a little bit, which is maybe if you're working with your developer, which is which basically achieves that you don't load all the images at the same time, right? So because especially if you have, let's say, an e-commerce page that has tons of images that are below the fold, and if it's not super dynamic, you know, which ones is appearing where. So you could be loading those images lazy loading, which means only once you start scrolling, the browser starts to do the requests, which means you don't have to load everything at the beginning. Yeah, it's really hard to like sort of categorize them in the sense of like this is like super easy to do and the other isn't. It's more about what is actually your problem on the page.
I would say. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you probably have so many thousands of insights that we could go into detail. But speaking of something that really affects every one of us, speaking of search engine optimization, which impact does a better page speed has on search engine optimization? Which role does it play? How can that really affect everything?
So obviously, so it is a ranking factor, right? That is clear. Everybody knows it's a ranking factor. What role does it play within those many ranking factors? You know, even within Google, this is like super secret. you don't really get to see what is the actual, at least on the level that I was. You don't get to see that. What I can say is just doing one little step back and think about like why is it even important for SEO, right? It's because Google gets more and more searches on mobile, and which means obviously there is more opportunity for ad spend on mobile, which means that if the companies that are doing ad spend on mobile are not successful with conversions because their pages are not optimized, then there's going to be less ad spend on mobile. So hence, there is a quite intrinsic interest also from many angles, you know, from a user's perspective angle, also from an, you know, ad spend angle, for many angles, there's a lot of reasons to say, okay, we have to sort of educate and push that companies are optimizing for page speed. So it is a ranking factor. To summarize, I can't really sort of like give you an order of magnitude or an order of measurement to this, of how important it is.
So just since you already mentioned a lot about how you could just improve your page speed, what are resources you would recommend people who would like to just get a better SEO performance, conversion and stuff like that through page speed optimization? What would you recommend them to read and look into?
Yeah, I think the approach that I would say is because, you know, as we just touched up there, there could be many things that you do, right? So I would say the suggestion that I would be given is to not try to learn from the outside in, but from the inside out, which means if you're having a page, run a test with your page and look at how long it takes and what seems to be correlating. You know, when you're scrolling through the screen on webpage test.org, you can see it super nicely. Okay, there's JavaScript files are finishing and I'm still blanking. You know, like that would be, I'd say, the approach rather than, you know, starting to read on all of the different techniques. And then there's also conflicting suggestions on those techniques. I would say, to keep it simple, look at your page. Is there something super, super dramatic that you can see? Is there maybe a huge video loading that is not even showing on desktop, right? Like on mobile. So that kind of things. Because I don't think anybody wants to spend the next couple of months learning about page speed optimization. So I'd say going inside out and trying to find what could be the major things affecting, and then, you know, speak with your development team. Is that something we could address potentially?
Awesome. Thanks so much for the insights, Lucas. End of last year, end of December 2018, you founded PathMonk. You already are active in multiple countries globally. But tell us about your company, tell us about what you do and what made you start this company.
Yeah, sure. So thanks for having the chance to talk a little bit about PathMonk. It's actually a little bit related to what we discussed before, because I think a great analogy of what happens on the website is your normal store, right? Looking at, you know, maybe a high-end clothing store, for example. you opening you, the door opens and you walk in, right? If the door opens super slowly, that might be your page speed. Now, okay, door opens, page loaded, you're walking into the store. And then you have, you know, the racks around you with the different items that you can be selling. And you can be arranging them differently. And that would be your page optimization, right? Your A-B testing, like should I put that code at the front or that rack to the back? And we found that there's actually one thing missing in the online experience, which is that there is an assistant, a person understanding what you're doing and then providing you helpful information, right? Yeah. In the store context, it would be, you know, a highly trained sales rep that is looking at, you know, what items has that person be looking at, maybe a reaction reading from the face, and then maybe sliding in and saying something like, you know, we just had a client just like yours that was really happy with this product, or let me tell you, you know, people usually ask this about this product. This is a good answer. So we identified that this piece is not really covered on the web yet. I think the first initial thought would be to say, hey, wait, we have chatbots, there are assistants. Mm-hmm. But if I move then one step further and compare that back to the store analogy that we just had, in my humble opinion, what a chatbot would be doing is sitting in the right corner of the store behind an information desk and waiting until you come and ask a question. Based on these insights, PathMonk has been born. And we basically built a technology that helps users to, or companies to, convert usually around 40% more leads from their website by measuring all the steps that are happening within the user's journey and automatically reacting to this through what we call smart cards. And smart cards hold product information such as case studies, frequently asked questions, testimonials, just what I was mentioning with the salesperson, and slide them into the user's experience powered by an artificial intelligence, which figures out when should I show which of the cards and what I've been learning about which of the cards and what product is a user interested in. And now should I show a card that is specific to that product? Yeah, so that's the high level, let's say, concept that we working on.
What's the difference, or what's the metrics between smart cards and chatbots? Because all of us, and I think all of the listeners as well, we've all seen chatbots, and who uses them? It's like nobody really does. Nobody really relies on them. Nobody really trusts them. So can you share some insights on conversions, smart cards versus chatbots?
Yeah, so that's now sort of anecdotally from, you know, clients we've been working with, and our insights. I would say, I think first things first, right? In the chat context, there is a place for chat. And the place for chat is in a lot of cases in the customer service context, right? You have a burning question. You want to get that off your chest. You need an answer right now because it's super tricky to figure something out. Then you need chat. But it's a different context. It's not selling. It's not proactively selling on the page, right? And so in terms of the metrics, what we've been seeing is with our customers that we've been working with is an uplift of conversion. So if you would say you're sitting on a 2% conversion right now, an uplift up to around 40%. So you're moving from a 2% to a 2.8%. Mm-hmm. Plastic, a very plastic example, right? I can only now speak about chatbots setups that I've been seeing with customers that we've been talking with, but they've been trying before, because there's obviously different experiences out there. But we've seen an uplift of around 10%. So that's my anecdotal knowledge, the cases that we've been working with, that we've been seeing. So it's smart cards around 40%. Chatbots on what we've seen somewhere around 10%.
Who are your actual target group? So what kind of people would you recommend your product for?
Yeah, so we work primarily, so we cover all goals from a website. So we cover that a lead is being collected, we cover that a trial is being started, we cover that a download should be happening. So in that sense, it can be providers of very different types of products. So primarily we work at the moment with software companies, and software companies usually have one or two, sometimes even three goals on their website. So they want to maybe a certain chunk of the visitors go for a trial, but another chunk of visitors they want to have for a demo, right? Based on how big the company is, because it might be an enterprise deal, for example. And so smart cards help also in the qualification of this. So there's a qualification part to this that helps you to figure out, okay, is that a client that would be matching your product A or your product B, and which goal do you have for each of the products, and it's going to show cards according to that goal that that user has been sort of assigned to.
Just a little giveaway for everyone out there who's listening and who's very interested in the product that Lucas is offering. We offer a free trial month, so the first month is actually for free. Get in touch with us to learn more about Lucas and his company.
Yeah, head to pathmonk.com. You can see actually the cards in action there. You can check a video demo. There is currently, it's been running definitely until the end of the year, 1 month free trial for companies who want to get started and get to see and feel the cards on their page.
Awesome.
So since we talked also a little bit about conversions, what would you say are the five things you think improve conversion?
The five things that improve conversion. I would sort of go back to what I was just saying before, is to look at the journey that somebody is doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So at the first step, if you don't open your door, you're not going to have a conversion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's page speed, right? Looking at page speed. Second thing is then, I would say, is obviously just, you know, does the value proposition, and this is, you know, where a lot of folks are working on, does your value proposition match what your people expecting from mm-hmm. where they're coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Then I think it's about, especially on mobile, it's about findability of information. We've seen in so many tests actually that we've been running on the cards, one key element of the cards can also be to just show, highlight a piece of information, even though it is on the page, but it hasn't been found, right? So anything along the lines of social proof and testimonials. One thing I think that I could say from what we've been learning with the data is there is different path to conversions, and there is different moments where a user is much more likely to convert, right? So for example, if you look at the first, second, third, fourth visit, users, the likelihood tends to decrease, right? If you're on that first visit, within that first hour, that's what our data shows us, you have the highest likelihood to convert somebody. So optimizing for that is one element. And if you go even a couple of steps deeper, and that's, I think, what is really what PathMonk helps to answer is, you know, how many visits does it take for somebody to convert? How many seconds do you have on the page to be in that group that is most likely to convert? What user actions, and I'm talking about really scrolling down, do they flip screens, like going in focus, out focus? We saw a high correlation with a couple of going in and out focus to then converting, which means, you know, they might have been just comparing something and now it's the time to show a piece of information. So I think it's really hard for me to say, like, this is the five key things, but I would say go along that journey, along that journey from when they're coming into your store to, you know, what is the value that they see immediately to then what are they doing? And then work on those three elements, right? Your page speed, your base setup of your page. Do people understand what you're doing, right? Doing a small user test can be having wonders there. What do people think after they look 5 seconds on your page? What do you even do? And then supporting them when they're on your page with, you know, right content at the right time.
Very cool, Lucas. So speaking about things that work, this is what we did already. But tell us about the one thing. If you look back on your career the last 10 years. What has gone horribly wrong? What was your biggest fuck up? The thing where you look back and say, this was the biggest mistake that happened.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple. There's actually a lot. So if I look at, you know, maybe I look at the time that we're building up the company, right? Because obviously within your normal job, there's a lot of stuff that can go wrong. But within building up the company, I would say there's two things. I mentioned already that we initially, very, very initially started to build chatbots as well, you know, because we were interested by the hype. We were sort of seeing all the potential with, you know, you can integrate into WhatsApp potentially, you can go into Messenger. And we completely overlooked that people don't start interacting, right? And we learned that the hard way. We built a whole system for companies to use chatbots for bookings and rebookings, for example, of certain services. And a lot of people wouldn't start interacting. So I would say that's one big thing, one big learning, to not jump for the hype of the technology or the latest fad of the technology, but to be having really a core use case, a core problem that you're going to be solving, because those hypes are going to come and go, those blog articles are going to change, but you're still stuck with the technology. So I'd say that's one of the things. And I mean, even, you know, now in building up the company, there's a lot of stuff, but also being able to figure out who really, really has the problem, who really, maybe one sentence there I would say is, having the problem and knowing that you're having the problem are two very different things, right? You can be talking to a company, even though they don't have strong conversions. The point until they realize and that they internalize and really think they need to act is not necessarily given. So, for example, focusing like us working with software company works for example great because they've been there. They know they want to optimize their website. While certain companies wouldn't put their primary focus there. Mm-hmm. So that would be one of the bigger learnings as well. I think those two stories definitely has been hard lessons or good lessons, let's say.
Lucas, you shared so many, many exciting stories, so many exciting insights, so we could go on for another hour, two or three even, but I'd like to try at least to summarize what we've been discussing. You mentioned tons of metrics that you have to take into consideration, but the most important thing for anybody out there that would like to optimize their page speed or optimize their conversion is go along the journey. Take a look at the journey that users take, that potential clients take. Take a look at page speed. Take a look at the value proposition, and if that matches the expectations. And would you also mention what I found very interesting is the findability. So a lot of people go somewhere, but they do not find the relevant information that they're looking for. And in order to increase and optimize your own performance of the website, you don't have to change the entire tech infrastructure to optimize. You can take tiny little steps along the way. And in order to do so, you have to start at the very beginning. Like, what is blocking your rendering? What's the journey you just mentioned? You also shared a very interesting metric in the beginning, where you said 53% of all users will leave the site if it takes longer than 3 seconds to load. Of course, this may vary from user to user, but I think this is very interesting that the patience in humans is just so low that after 3 seconds, they just leave. And do not try to learn from the outside in, take learning from outside in, but start inside, do it from the inside out. And then I think that one of the most important things that you said was mentioned at the very beginning, there's always a structured approach for the problem that you're facing right now. And it's very likely that somebody out there was already facing the same issue before. And Lucas, it was such a big pleasure to have you in the show. Thank you so much for sharing all your insights. We will share all relevant information with this episode so that people follow you and see what you're doing and also learn from you. And thank you so, so much for enlightening us, for bringing all the insights into the show, Lucas. And we're very excited to see your journey along the way.
Thanks a lot, guys, for having me. Really appreciate your insightful questions.